Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the editor of the New Books Network. NBN listeners like to read books and buy them. So we thought we'd tell you that right now, our friends at Princeton University Press are having a remarkable site-wide sale. You can get 50% off books, including ebooks and audiobooks, with the code 50, F-I-F-T-Y, at checkout until May 31. You can save some real money on Princeton University Press books. I encourage you to go there and check it out. Welcome to the New Books Network.
Hello, and welcome back to New Books in Political Science, a podcast channel on the New Books Network. I'm Venise Abdelati from Maxwell School of Syracuse University. Today, I'll be talking to Ivan Yenda Ilunga about his book, Humanitarianism and Security, Trouble and Hope at the Heart of Africa, which was published by Palgrave Macmillan in 2020. Ivan, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Venise, for having me.
So I wonder if you could begin the interview by just telling us a little bit about yourself.
Great. As you said, I'm Ivan Yenda Ilunga. I'm an assistant professor of political science and international relations at Selva Regina University in Newport, Rhode Island, and originally from the Democratic Republic of Congo, where I spent most of my childhood.
So how did you come to write this book, Humanitarianism and Security?
That's a great question. I started this book as part of my PhD dissertation. So it's a very much a result of my PhD research and dissertation, which has been expanded into the book. But before that time, as I said, I was born in the DRC, in the Democratic Republic of Congo. And for almost 20 years, I observed the ongoing instability and struggle for peace and stability in the country at large, but also mostly in the eastern part of the DRC. Starting observing it while I was still very much in high school in the 1998 and so on. And I was intrigued by the fact that at some point we had this time of great conversations on how to rebuild the country, and then going downhill with major instabilities. So growing up in the Congo, I was very much interested in knowing what is happening and what should be done, especially when we saw the first contingent of the UN peacekeepers coming into the country. And over the years, so by observing that, I was very much interested in the issue, but I did not know that I'll find myself in the space where I research and talk about this, but it came from that angle of personal experiences and observation. And then going into my master's and PhD programs, I was then interested to say, well, I have to continue researching and talking about these issues. That's how I ended up doing it as part of my PhD research and writing it as part of this book.
So for listeners who may not be familiar, can I ask you to give us some background information about the humanitarian crisis in the Democratic Republic of the Congo?
Yes, definitely. I would try to start by probably putting some time frame into that. Yes, the Congo has known as a country that was under King Leopold II. It was very much a Belgian colonies with another form of humanitarian crisis, human exploitations over the years and over the century. But that was the pre-independence DRC, pre-independence Congo. And coming in the 1960s with the waves of independences in Africa, there was a search for stability. And of course, the DRC, a country with many ethnicities and very much huge in terms of the field and the ground from east to west, north to south. It's just very huge. I think the institution itself, political institutions, tried to find the ways of creating a sense of stability. But that was an ongoing and still very much an ongoing struggle. But the first humanitarian crisis that I tried to unpack is a humanitarian crisis based off ethnic conflict within the TRC, and then which exacerbated with the Rwandan genocide when the DRC opened the border to Rwandan refugees in 1994. And of course, hosting refugees created the social dynamics in some communities, which became difficult to handle and manage. And then in 1997, 1998, the Congo had what has been known for by some political scientists as the first African World War. And that has led to massive humanitarian crisis, human rights violations, and killings of civilians. And that went from 1998 to 2003. And of course, past that cycle, there is still very much an ongoing humanitarian crisis in the DRC. So this is a little bit of a timeline with multiple crises that the country has had. And to put a number on that, it is estimated that more than 7 million Congolese have died in the very recent humanitarian crisis starting in 1998.
Thank you. Now, one of the earliest arguments you make in the book has to do with the importance of incorporating pre-colonial security dynamics. Can you tell us about that?
Yes. I think one of that argument came based on some research and observations. As I said, in 1998, 1999 up to 2003, there has been multiple attempts to restore peace and stability in the DRC. And most of these attempts were based on the push for political peace agreement and peace settlement. And this is a very top-down approach to crisis and conflict management. But unfortunately, apart from the fact that there has been some political arrangements within the capital of the DRC, Kinshasa, and other provinces, local communities that have been impacted and affected by these years of violence and instabilities did not find their ways into these peace processes. And one of the reasons is because the local dynamics of conflict and local aspect of these instabilities have been ignored and not being highly considered in the framework of peace building. So in this chapter, I argue that instability in Africa, and more specifically in the DRC, is a local, or basic instabilities are local dynamics first before becoming national dynamics. So therefore, there are pillars of stability that have been observed in pre-colonial Africa for many years. And this has been the ground for political conversations and negotiations between, for instance, ethnic groups or villages or kingdoms. They had their ways, indigenous ways of negotiating peace settlement and establishing long-term partnerships and collaborations. And these are some very much important aspect anchored in traditional African practices, which have been ignored in modern political strategies of peace settlement and peace recovery. And I argue in the book that it is important to balance the modern practices of peace agreement and peace building with the considerations of traditional practices, which constituted for generations the pillar of stability and the functionalities of local communities.
Now, the book includes an extended discussion of identity crises, where you develop the concepts of denationalization, depatriotization, and hybrid identity. What do you mean by these terms?
Yes. You know, when we think about humanitarian crisis, one of the biggest considerations in modern time, we consider it as a logistical crisis. We think of refugees and displaced people. And one of course, the responses is to say, well, let's think about the basic human need, shelters, food, waters, and the rest. But forgetting that the core issue in humanitarian crisis, it's very much a human crisis. And this human crisis is extrapolated into what I call three dimensions, depatriotization, denationalization, and hybrid identity. I'll start probably by denationalization, because that one I consider it as an administrative process which disconnect people from their home countries. For instance, you have refugees, and this is more specifically targeted or geared toward refugee crisis. When someone is a refugee, it means they leave their country, and in the case of the DRC, there is conflict erupting in the eastern parts of the DRC. Congolese will cross the border. They'll move to Uganda, and there they will be, for instance, put in a refugee camp. And for the United Nations to and other international agencies to provide assistance to these displaced people known as refugees, they need to enroll them, to register them, in order to get the legal and administrative protections under their new status as refugees. So by moving into that direction of letting go of your own country's protection, and embrace a new form of international protections by embracing a new identity, which is a refugee identity, that process constitutes what I call the process of denationalization. And in other words, embracing a new identity. So that itself, it's a new crisis within the consideration of individuals. So now you're no longer a Congolese. To be more specific in this case, you are first of all a refugee, because that becomes your legal status, and you get another form of protection, another form of services. And in the book, I argue that these are clear crises that one needs to think about. It's not just about geographic dislocation, but it's also a human identity which is transitioning from that, from home country's identity to the new form of identity. And going to the second identity crisis, which I call depatriotization. This is more specifically for the internally displaced populations who did not manage to cross the border, but they moved from their hometowns, their home villages, to other places, a place of safety. And in cases where governments were unable to provide security in their home places, and this population finding themselves in the new place as groups, there are two things that can come up with, can happen. One is the complete lack of trust in institution. So not feeling like being part of the overall country's fabric, not being part of this national identity. And therefore, it becomes a process of depatriotization. So people feel like, well, we don't belong to this national system anymore. And there's a second dynamic. They will try to regroup and attach to their group identity. In some cases, it's just ethnic identity. And we have seen people saying, we are more of this particular ethnic groups than this nationality. So that process is part of the identity crisis, which I call depatriotization. So the disconnect from the overall national identity to a group identity based on the fact that institutions were unable to provide and protect. And the last aspect, back to your question, the hybrid identity, this is happening for the kids who are born in refugee camps with basically no nationality. It is projected that humanitarian assistance, especially displacement and establishment of refugee camps, are framed to be short-term project. But times has shown and research has demonstrated that the average time that people spend in refugee camps is 18 years. So here you see someone being born today and spend 18 years in the refugee camps, and which type of identity will they have? So there is a challenge between embracing the refugee identity based on the legal status of the parent, or being connected to your host countries and thinking about your home countries that you basically don't know. And this becomes a hybrid identity that many people observe. And it's psychological, it's illegal, it's political feelings that need to be considered as part of the overall dimension of humanitarian crisis.
So following up on these identity crises, do you mind talking about what role Pan-Africanism can play here?
Yes. Pan-Africanism has an ideology is set to build a cross-border identity. And then I think Pan-Africanism could play a major role because instead of being limited by the legal identity of a country, saying I'm Congolese, I'm Burundian, I'm Kenyan, but you move from that dimension to say I'm an African. And being an African, to that sense, will allow people to do not feel like they are foreign in their home countries. And this could very much play for people struggling with the hybrid identity. Because and then the way of reconstructing the human agencies in the African context, they will consider themselves as African rather than labeling them based on a specific country. And this is key, especially in this modern days and time, when we think there is a push for regional integration on the continent. Either economic integration, but also allowing human mobilities across countries. So that could be considered as one of the steps toward reducing this identity crisis, but also restoring human agencies of people who have been victims of massive human rights violations, humanitarian crisis, and still up to now struggle to find their real identity beyond probably the ethnicities, which is very much linked to the blood.
Now, the book also discusses the interplay between institutional deficits and humanitarian legitimacy. What is your argument there?
When humanitarian crisis occurred, or let's say when conflict happens, especially in the context of armed conflict, you have national institutional deficit, which reflect the absence of the national government to control and provide safety and security all across its territories. And in so many cases, you will see that you have armed groups controlling certain regions, controlling big parts of the countries. And this, it's so interesting to see that the book was published back then, but the same dynamics are at play today, where you have groups such as, if I may mention one, the M23 today, controlling territories. But then these groups, or this armed group, by the fact that they control territories, they are not just controlling dry land. They control entities, jurisdictions, where you have civilians living in those places probably who could not run away from. So, but these civilians need assistance, need humanitarian assistance. So there has been questions of whether we should collaborate with these armed groups or we should talk to them or consider them or give them a sense of credibility in order to open the space for humanitarian convoy or assistance and so on. And this is where I talked about the circumstantial legitimacy. And I was very deliberate by putting that circumstantial legitimacy in humanitarian crisis, which fall under humanitarian legitimacy. And saying these groups deserve a circumstantial legitimacy in terms of being considered as credible actor, not based on their behavior, but based on the fact that they are controlling territories. And if we aim to protect civilians, we have to acknowledge who is the chief of this territory in the basic terms, who has the full control of these jurisdictions. And this is where I argue that we need to establish certain levels of humanitarian legitimacy. One of them is humanitarian legitimacy based on control of territory. In other words, thinking on who has the power over this territory and interact with him or with them as a way not of giving them a legal status, but as a way of collaborating so that the civilians who are under the jurisdictions can get the necessary help and assistance. There is another dimension which I elaborated in the book. It's a humanitarian legitimacy based on the action. In other words, we think of certain steps that we need to consider if we need to deal with these authorities or not. And more specifically, this has to do with the human rights record. And if we assess and consider that the human rights record is a little bit acceptable, we could then move in the direction of creating an open conversation, not again in order to provide them with a legal status, but at least to bring them into space where civilians under their jurisdictions could still get assistance. And this is not only happening, of course, in the book I talk more the case of the DRC. I will try probably to extrapolate for a few minutes or a few seconds here. When we think of what is happening in Afghanistan, you know, with the Taliban, there's this debate of should we very much consider them as a credible partner to talk with for humanitarian assistance purposes. And this is where the concept of circumstantial legitimacy comes in as part of humanitarian legitimacy. So for them, for instance, it's humanitarian legitimacy based on control. So not an action. On the action side, we can still question their human rights considerations and interpretation and practice. But based on control, they are controlling the country. And we have to talk to them in order to protect and assist civilians who are under their jurisdictions.
Thank you. So now I'd like to turn to transitional public security. The book argues that this is an important paradigm for addressing the DRC's humanitarian crisis. What is transitional public security, and in what ways can it be applied in this context?
Yes, in a very practical terms, well, when a country goes through instability and institutional deficit, you realize that sometimes the military are not able to provide safety and security for their people. And in places where you have had UN, the United Nations peacekeepers, and other external forces assisting countries to provide or restore peace and security, one of the considerations within transitional public security is the fact that there is an assumption of saying there is no functional armed forces in the country. And outsiders who came to help have to transition their responsibility from being the security providers as outsiders. They need to identify and transition this responsibility to national armed forces as the new security provider and guarantor. And of course, the concept itself was very much developed by the Department of Defense of the United States over the years, where this idea of transitioning from U.S. responsibility to host countries' responsibilities came to play. And in the context of the DRC, I consider it, especially in this book, as a critical space where, for instance, the country has been unable in some instances providing or controlling its territory. And you had places where the UN has control and provide safety and security. And these days you have the Eastern African communities providing security in certain regions. And the context and concept of transitional public security comes into play by asking determinant questions such as what has to happen in order for these outside forces to help or to leave the country by transferring the responsibility to the DRC forces. And a couple of things were developed in the book, and I will probably pick one of them is could be rebuilding the army itself as a big process into transitional public security. So how do you rebuild an army? And of course, there's been attempt by creating such as integrations of these armed groups into the national political machineries and hard machineries of the DRC, but that did not work. I make a case in the book that this integration did not help much. So there is still a need to rebuild the army. But in the context where the integration of armed forces, armed groups into the national armed forces happened, this goes to the second point of the transitional public security in the book, was that there is an issue of leadership and accountability. Since these armed groups have a certain way of being loyal to a person, not to institution, that leads to another crisis this time around within the armed forces. So the question of how do we transition, how do we transfer our capabilities and responsibility to host countries in terms of building their home military systems and defense system, it's of great concerns and deserves big attention in the context of the DRC and other places where armed groups have opposed the national government.
So I'd like to also ask you, what are your recommendations with regard specifically to refugees and internally displaced persons?
Yeah, so I think one of my point of recommendation is that we definitely have to think about the returns of refugees, right? There is a narratives of when do we hand this status of refugees? Do we hand it by considering them as a new citizen of their host countries, or do we hand this status by saying, well, now we can pack and then go back? So the first element in the recommendation is the acknowledgement of the fact that refugee status, it's just a legal status at first. So, but people into this status have human agencies, and these human agencies need to be put up front. So they are not kids who should be moved from left to right and right to left. So the first recommendation is to bring back that human consideration into the refugee crisis, understanding that these are people with full agency. And the second element is when we think of returning refugees to their home countries, there are things that one need to think about. One should be, for instance, assessing the home country's governance capabilities. Is to see if the place, their home countries, still have the legal policy and logistical resources and capabilities to re-host them and provide the basic needs and security before we think of returning refugees in their home countries. And the second recommendation is the fact that we need to be critical in assessing the local security dynamics. It is often easy to say, well, the country A has reached a peace agreement with rebel groups. And then, of course, the peace settlement is happening. We have elections. Then everything is okay. Refugees can go back. But that is just the top considerations of what is happening at the political level. But one of the reasons why people become refugees or internally displaced is because the local spaces have been destabilized, which push them to run and leave their places. So a consideration to that point will be a critical assessment of the local security dynamics. If we run because there was no water, just a basic example, going back will necessitate to have water. But if this water is not there, then there is no need to talk about going back, even if the political space has been harmonized. So these are some of the considerations and recommendations for me, I think, deserve more attention. And to the broader sense, a clear understanding of the fact that the humanitarian crisis is still not a logistical crisis. It's a human crisis. And until we discuss the humanity of this crisis, we will not be able to address the real issue.
So obviously there's much, much more in the book. And we've really only skimmed the surface, but I wanted to ask you, is there anything we haven't covered yet that you think is important for listeners to know?
Yes, I think there are probably one thing which I think it's of interest to me and based on humanitarianism and security is the fact that there is an ongoing transition in the conversations of humanitarian crisis. Over the years, we've had more kind of the peace, development, and humanitarian nexus where the transition is set to be from humanitarian crisis, for instance, to development project and opportunities, which is really, really great move. But in the book, I focus more on the humanitarian and the security nexus because one cannot think of long-term peace building and stability without addressing root causes, not root causes of conflict, but root causes of human crisis. And in most cases, these are human crises and not logistical crises. I keep insisting on that. For the DRC, sometimes it's not even a natural resource crisis. It's still a human crisis. So we should probably go beyond the consideration of logistics resources and then think more of that humanity crisis that many people into these conflict zones are experiencing.
Thank you for that. So Ivan, we've taken up a lot of your time. So I just want to ask you a final question. You know, this book came out into the world in 2020. We're now in 2023. So I'm wondering, what are you working on now?
Well, I'm working still very much. This is part of my ongoing conversations. I'm very much attached to it, I guess, until I see clear change. But I'm also working on a two major project. One is called the African Wars in the 21st Century. So trying to think of the new types of factors of stability and instability in Africa in the 21st century beyond the traditional wars. And that project is in its third year now. We started it in 2020, and we just had one of the workshops on that this past Friday. And another project which I'm very much working on is peace operation, but looking at this and misinformation in our peacekeeping operations. So those are the two major projects I'm focusing on these days.
Those both sound fascinating and also very important. I really enjoyed our conversation. Thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you so much for having me. We appreciate it.
The book is Ivan Yenda Ilunga's Humanitarianism and Security, Trouble and Hope at the Heart of Africa, published by Palgrave Macmillan in 2020. Thank you for listening.